This is the KOTO Community Radio News for Thursday, March 25th. I'm Matt Hoisch. In today's headlines, San Miguel County in nebulous phase of pandemic response, increased demand for support services continues through COVID, director Matt Skerritt discusses his film Angst, and a mountain weather forecast. San Miguel County is in flux when it comes to COVID-19. Vaccines are getting in arms, numbers are low, but we haven't reached the light at the end of the tunnel when it comes to the coronavirus pandemic.
We're into this kind of nebulous phase of trying to learn how to balance this added level of protection, but knowing that there's still a lot of folks that need vaccines, need that level of immunity, and we're not quite there yet, but things are starting to shift again.
That's San Miguel County Public Health Director Grace Franklin speaking on KOTO on Thursday. Part of Franklin's concern is the presence of the so-called UK variant in San Miguel County. Last week, the variant appeared in wastewater treatment sample testing, and two residents tested positive for the variant.
This isn't a surprise. We were expecting this to happen at some point, knowing that there's a lot of mobility in our community. But now that we have this data really supporting that this more transmissible virus is here, it's really just the point to recognize that things are going really well, but we need to stick with what works in order to keep moving forward safely.
Franklin notes the amount of the variant in the wastewater doesn't fully match up with the number of cases. There is more of the variant in the wastewater than tested positive. She believes that speaks to fewer people getting tested.
I'd say that our perceived risk as a community, as a state, as a nation has gone down, meaning people are feeling more comfortable, more confident that the virus is going away and everything will return to normal soon. And we're not quite there yet.
But at the same time, this week, San Miguel County moved into level blue on the state's COVID dial. That loosened restrictions on everything from lodging to gyms, retail to restaurants. Franklin says she's heard from a number of residents concerned by the notion that the county is opening more at the same time as a more transmissible version of the virus is here.
I understand that sentiment, but also I do want to acknowledge that we're in a really good place. Our case counts are low, with level blue and level green in this new dial. Distancing, that 6-foot distance, mask use, and keeping your pod size small and stable are still the key elements to success and are expected across businesses.
She notes the presence of the UK variant doesn't inherently have an impact on the county's COVID level, but adds if people disregard public health orders, a more transmissible variant will likely result in more restrictions.
If we get too relaxed and the variant is highly prevalent, we're more likely to have higher case numbers, and that will just all dovetail quickly.
There is light at the end of the COVID-19 tunnel, but San Miguel County is in a balancing act as we move toward it. Another reminder that COVID-19 and its impacts still linger is the sustained increase in people accessing social support services from the community and local governments.
Families are just coming back around to say, yep, we still have that need. Or, you know, an immediate need was met, you know, a couple months ago or through Christmas, but then now, you know, people are back to, oh, yep, we need additional support to help, you know, kind of get through these next couple of months.
That's Carol Friedrich, Director of Social Services for San Miguel County. According to data from her department, numbers are down from their peaks in the early months of COVID, but still above their pre-COVID levels. The monthly caseload number for food assistance, for instance, was a little over 190 in February 2021, down from a peak of almost 240 in July, but still more than 50% higher than levels in the months before the pandemic. And even that, Friedrich notes, is likely an underestimate of the need.
We still have people out there that are eligible but not enrolled.
It's a similar story at Angel Basket's food pantry. According to co-director Kathy Mahoney, last month, their Telluride location saw about 350 visits. far less than the roughly 1,500 visits they had in April 2020, but still more than double their pre-COVID average of about 150 per month. Like much of the country, though, the Telluride region has seen a tale of two economies. Both the towns of Telluride and Mountain Village saw sales tax dips of less than 10% last year compared to 2019, with some months outperforming the same month in 2019. But that hasn't meant everyone has kept up at the same rate.
For high-wage workers, you know, we're back to pre-pandemic levels. But low-wage workers are still getting crushed in this pandemic.
Paul Major is the CEO of the Telluride Foundation, which has administered the Good Neighbor Fund to support people who have been struggling.
Because a lot of jobs, low-wage, service-level jobs, were eliminated or downsized throughout the pandemic. And that's not a surprise, right? You walked into restaurants and it was takeout. So a lot of the servers or a lot of the back-of-the-house staff or people that were working in hotels.
Earlier this month, the foundation announced they had run out of money for Good Neighbor Fund grants and are looking for more. But demand is still there. According to Major, they still have about $50,000 in requests. But while some support sources have dried up, others have appeared. The Colorado Department of Local Affairs recently launched a program to distribute almost $250 million in rental and utility assistance from the federal government. The funding can help cover past, current, and future expected housing costs for both property owners and tenants. The town of Telluride also has a fund to assist those in privately owned housing in the town. According to town manager Ross Herzog, that fund still has about $40,000 available. Both the towns of Telluride and Mountain Village have provided assistance to those in town-owned housing, and neither of them have had to evict people from those units due to an inability to pay rent during the pandemic. Of course, one variable unique to the Telluride region is off-season. Friedrich hopes people use support programs if they need the help as the local economy slows down in the coming months.
These are safety net programs that help folks during those down times, you know, during the times when there are fewer jobs available. And so, you know, I would hope that people use this as a tool.
Friedrich urges anyone who wants to use those programs to go to the Colorado Peak website, a one-stop shop to access support. That website is coloradopeak.secure.force.com. This Tuesday, Tri-County Health Network will host a virtual screening of the film Angst, which examines a pervasive and sometimes paralyzing feeling, anxiety. KOTO spoke with the film's director and co-producer, Matt Skerritt, about the project. A warning, this interview touches on the topics of self-harm and suicide. The conversation started by explaining what the movie is about.
Angst is about an hour-long documentary that we designed to help people who were either suffering from anxiety or loved someone who was. We learned very quickly that there were a lot of people that fell into that category, like pretty much everybody, actually. And anxiety, you know, is a spectrum, really, kind of. It doesn't, and that's my terminology, that's not the science of it, but fundamentally, it's like I can be anxious about having a radio interview. I could, on the other hand, be anxious about breathing germs all day long or touching them. You know, or I could be nervous about a test that I'm taking at school to the point where I don't go to school. I could get so anxious that I take my own life.
You can tell just from your answer right there, this is such a broad and varied topic. I guess, what inspired you and your team to even make a film about anxiety in the first place? Why hone in on that?
Sheila Andreen at IndieFlix was kind enough to ask me to come in to direct it. It was an idea she had been mulling over. It immediately felt right, primarily because my wife, Wendy, and I have a daughter, Louisa, who's in the film, who was suffering from pretty serious anxiety. She had been diagnosed with, I believe it was socialized anxiety disorder. You know, she was cutting a little bit. She was down on herself all the time. She was trying to figure out how to navigate it. And we were trying to figure out how to navigate it. At some points, you know, where you're so concerned as a parent, you do things that you wouldn't normally allow yourself to do. You know, you find yourself screaming at your kid because you want her to feel better. Like, what is that? How does that work? You know, you don't trust her to be alone in her room. I took her door off of her room like a schmuck, you know, to give her, to take away that privacy so she couldn't hurt herself. And that kind of anxiety that I then had to start to own as a parent became more the issue for me, because I couldn't help her until I had helped myself. And I found that to be immediately was finding that to be true for a lot of other parents I was talking to and a lot of other people who have loved ones who are suffering from clinical anxiety.
And so after making an entire movie about this thing that, as you've said, everyone feels, what do you think that you learned about anxiety that you didn't know before making this movie?
One of the things, I learned a lot of things about anxiety. The most poignant fact is that thing that I mentioned earlier that you just touched on. Everybody is dealing with it. Some form or fashion, everybody has been dealing. Now, mind you, this was before COVID. So turn up the volume on all of that, you know, but the fact that everyone is dealing with it, the fact that everyone that you will ever meet knows and loves someone who's dealing with a serious level of anxiety, if not all the time, certainly some of the time. This is, it's okay to talk about this. We need to be talking about it. If we're not talking about it, and this is what some of the clinicians and doctors said in their film, you know, talk about this. The first thing you have to do is talk about it. Because if you actually don't, it doesn't even matter who you're talking to, just say the words, you know, I'm really anxious. I'm really nervous about this. I was really nervous about that. Talk about it. And then you can start. And it's true with so many things, right? Then you can start to evolve and start to grow through it.
Matt Skerritt is the director and co-producer of the movie Angst. Tri-County Health Network will host a screening of the film this Tuesday at 6 p.m. over Zoom, followed by a panel discussion. More information is available at tchnetwork.org. Elizabeth Becker doesn't know how to roller skate, so this next part of her story doesn't make a ton of sense. It happened when she went down to Grand Junction with her partner to grab a pair of skates for a friend from a roller rink that was closing down.
And I was just like watching the whole roller rink get disbanded. And all of a sudden I was like, we have to get a U-Haul right now. And we got a like huge box truck. We filled it with like as much of the decor as we could salvage. It was all going in the dumpster, and it was just like Art Deco, way too cool to let go of. It's all 90s. So we got all the carpeting and we got all the booths and like the signs.
They also bought 60 pairs of skates.
Anyone who knows me, when I texted them these pictures of us like taking wheelbarrows full of skates out, because we didn't even have like a place to put them. We just had like wheelbarrows and trash cans. It's like grabbing everything we could. But anyway, I sent all these pictures to people and they were like, you hate roller skating. And like, they're like, so many people just didn't believe me that I did that.
Again, doesn't make a ton of sense.
You like, I feel like you just kind of impulse bought a roller rink.
I did. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, I did impulsively, totally impulsively on the spot without giving it a single thought. I was just like, I guess I'm doing this.
But the tale comes together a bit more when we remember it's happening during the pandemic. When COVID hit, Becker lost her job as a casting director.
Television, like, disappeared kind of literally overnight. Like, everything I thought I was going to be able to do this year vanished. And so I have just been in a position of, A, seeing what's happening to the community that I love in, like, Telluride and Norwood and wondering what can I do. And then also trying to figure out something for myself to do.
So, Becker and her partner are putting the decor and gear to good use. This weekend in Norwood, they're organizing their first pop-up skating event, what they're calling Maverink.
Hopefully, number one, we just get kids on skates ASAP, because they've had such a hard year, especially teenagers and little kids. They just need stuff to do.
Adults, she notes, are also welcome. They'll provide skates, though Becker also urges anyone who can to bring their own in case they run out of sizes, as well as helmets and pads, which they don't have. There will also be hot drinks and locally sourced tacos.
All of our meat is local. All of our tortillas are local. So if you don't like to skate, you can just come down and grab a taco.
According to Becker, the public health department signed off on the event and is only suggesting mask use, not requiring it, since the gathering will be outside and people tend to stay further apart when skating, though they will be sanitizing all surfaces throughout the event. And this isn't a one-and-done thing. The hope, Becker notes, is to put on other pop-up skating events across the region and even purchase a portable floor so they can set up almost anywhere.
You know, we're just going to feel this event out, see how it goes, and the more support we can get for this, the more we can do another one.
As for Becker, she'll be out there and on wheels. She's learning to skate and, she says, learning to love it. The Mavering skating event is this Friday at 5 p.m. and Saturday at 2 p.m. outdoors at the Pig Palace in Norwood. The gathering is free, but donations are encouraged, and Becker notes they are still looking for volunteers to help. Colorado's two Democratic U.S. senators say they're hopeful Congress will soon vote on new gun control legislation in response to the mass shooting in Boulder. Senator John Hickenlooper was one of several lawmakers who reacted to the tragedy during a virtual town hall watched by hundreds Wednesday night.
Universal background checks, I think we'll get there. It's going to be a heavy lift. It shouldn't be a heavy lift, but I think we'll eventually get back to an assault weapons ban.
Senator Michael Bennett made similar promises at the town hall, saying Congress should remove, quote, weapons of war from communities. You can tell by the 10-hour debates and lobbyist-filled hallways that things are returning to normal at the state capitol, and that has some lawmakers reviving bills they shelved because of the pandemic. That includes a healthcare plan that aims to lower costs for those who buy insurance on the individual market because they cannot get it through an employer. But, as KOTO's Scott Franz reports, the idea is once again stirring a big controversy.
Among his colleagues, Dylan Roberts continues to shoulder an unflattering statistic at the state capitol.
The two counties that I represent, Eagle and Rout, there is only one option on the health insurance market for those who buy on the individual market. And those premiums are some of the highest, not only in our state, but in our country.
And for the third time in 3 years, he's launching a bill he says has the best chance of fixing it. It's called the public health insurance option. We could spend hours discussing the nuances, so I'll let him explain the basics.
This plan puts some limits on how much hospitals can charge under the plan. It raises the amount of money per dollar that insurance companies have to spend on your actual care.
And he says adding a government-controlled plan could lower premiums by as much as 18%. There was momentum to pass it last year, but hospitals and insurance companies blasted it, saying it would destabilize the market. Then the pandemic hit.
So we went back to the drawing board and made some significant changes that actually make me feel more confident and excited about what's coming forward.
The latest version boils down to an ultimatum to the healthcare industry. Bring insurance prices down by 20% over the next 2.5 years, or the government will step in with its own plan to compete.
So that will drive everybody in the healthcare industry, I believe, to the table.
But even Roberts acknowledges that 2.5 years is a long time, and his constituents really can't afford to wait, like freelance writer Dave Williams.
Year after year, we keep paying $20,000 a year for health insurance for a young, relatively healthy family.
Williams lives in Eagle County, which only has one insurance option on the individual market.
And the deductibles on these plans are terrible. We don't start getting the benefit until we pay $6,500. So hopefully the insurance industry understands the situation and really works hard with the providers to get the cost down.
It's time to tell politicians we cannot afford the state government option.
But the healthcare industry is already blasting the new bill. They recently spent about $1 million running ads like this, attacking it.
It gives politicians greater control over your healthcare, threatening the coverage you already have and increasing costs.
For Williams and others who are paying out tens of thousands of dollars each year on health insurance, the ads are hard to watch.
These oversimplified ads don't help. They do not help the situation, because what needs to really happen is lawmakers, the health insurance providers, and the health care providers all need to get on the same page here and really start resolving this issue.
Advocates of a public option say the COVID-19 pandemic has made the issue more critical.
Thousands of Coloradans have lost their jobs. And along with the job loss, they've lost their employer-provided health insurance.
Kristen Nordenholz is an emergency medicine physician in Denver.
Nobody should have to choose between seeing a doctor, putting food on the table, or getting their medications.
But the bill is getting a chilly reception from Front Range business groups. The Denver Metro Chamber says it could shift the cost from the individual market to the majority of Coloradans who get it from their employers. The chamber declined an interview request for this story, and Roberts says he's not buying their concerns.
I've heard and read from some people who say that now is not the time for bold, necessary reforms like this bill. And all I'll say is that those individuals have not spent enough time with the constituents that we represent, who are paying some of the highest premiums in the state, and making decisions right now as to whether they should go another year without security of health insurance or not.
I hope this works. It needs to work.
Until it does, Dave Williams says Eagle County residents continue to face elevated premiums or risk going bankrupt if they go without insurance and get sick or injured.
It's really stifling people who are self-employed, which is a lot of us up here. It's stifling small business. It's really having a very dire economic impact.
Previous versions of the public option bill had Republican co-sponsors, but only Democrats are leading the effort on the latest version. I'm Scott Franz at the State Capitol.
The National Weather Service forecast for the Western San Juans calls for snow showers tonight with a low around 15. 1 to 2 inches of new snow accumulation is possible. Friday, snow showers with a high in the mid-30s and 1 to 2 inches of new snow accumulation possible. And Friday night, snow showers with a low around 10. Saturday, sunny with a high around 40. And Saturday night, mostly clear with a low around 10. This has been the news for Thursday, March 25th. Thanks for listening. If you have a story idea or a news tip, call the news team at 728-3206. We would like to thank everyone who donated to CODO during our Winter Fund Drive. A huge thank you to Stu and Ginny Frazier, Quentin Forey, Luigi Chiarani, Zach Templin, Lynn Mullings, John Scarborough, Sarah Bogner, Anna Blanton, Walter Weatherson, Carrie and Joe DiStefano, Patty Doe, Francesca Renborg, Keith Down, Eileen Clogus, Rodney Porch, Matt and Allison Templin, Gary Rodriguez, Luke Dow, Sasha and Colin Sullivan, Ken Bailey, Sarah and Morgan Lavender Smith, Carolyn Randy Reese, Robert Leroy Mattson, Roscoe Payne, Amy Bolt, Scott David, Claybrook Penn, Jessica McCauley, Sarah Spencer, Jody Brazzaleri, Chuck King, Andrew Shepard, and JD and Megan Weiss. Thank you all so much.